The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Greetings, Blenders, and welcome once again to Real Blend, a podcast that doesn't believe X-Men Dark Phoenix is an actual film. Milestone time, ladies and gentlemen.
What? Off the bat, dude.
We're going back to that? I mean, listen, I don't really know this is a movie that's happening. They keep pushing it back and pushing it back, and they came up with a trailer that looked like it had footage just recycled from previous X-Men
films. Sean, there's a difference between don't believe it's happening and just don't care. And I think I'm the latter.
You might be there too. So might everybody at Fox as they look to Marvel to please rescue us from whatever hole we've dug ourselves into. Milestone time. This is Real Blend number 40.
Yeah, it is.
The big 4-0. And that means that by now you guys know the drill. So I'm not going to do this every single week because I'm tired of doing this. I'm Sean O'Connell. I'm managing editor of Cinema Blend. Joining me each and every week, as you all know, because you tune in and you listen to us, is Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. Hello, BDK.
Good afternoon, Sean and Jake. And I cannot wait to debate and find out why. And Jake and I will prove why Sean is extremely wrong about his opinion.
This is unfair because I don't know Jake's opinion and you were at the junket with him.
It's actually gotten to a point where this is no longer an opinion.
I hate it when mom and dad fight.
Sean is just wrong about First Man. So it's not an opinion. He's just wrong.
Here's
the deal. You can't take that attitude because I'm going to rip you apart when we go to Monster Blend.
The other voice you hear is Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago. Hi, Jake.
Jonathan. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Very good. Well, now that Kevin's almost tipped his hand to where Jake is going to land on the First Man debate, but we will settle that in a little bit. We have so much show. We have an insane amount of show to get to. Big movies, big time movies that we can finally sink our teeth into. Venom, Star is Born, First Man. Later on in the show, we are playing, since we decided in October that we're going to do Halloween-themed, horror-themed blend game activities. We went with Monster Blend.
What theme was that, did you say, Sean?
Horror blend, Halloween blend. Take note of that, kids, if you're playing along at home, because that's going to be a sticking point. Although I may lean with Kevin in this one. So.
Oh, no!
I'm just saying.
We'll see. Okay, we'll see. Because we know Kevin's pick. You guys don't know my pick, and I don't know Sean's pick.
Right, okay. So, over on iTunes, reviews. We're still trying to collect reviews. We're still at 54 star ratings right now, and we have until December 31st to reach 100, a self-stated goal of 100. And if we don't get there, Jake is getting kicked off this program, I swear to God. He's out of here. So
I like that you think that I'll still be on this program by the time we get to the end of the year. Well, that's very optimistic of you.
I don't think Jake knows this, but I spoke to Damien Chazelle, and he's totally open to be our third person. So if we don't reach that star rating, it's DC.
But then I told him Sean's review, and he changed his mind.
If you do go over to the iTunes and leave us a review, we have promised to read it on the show, and we have two. So last week, I mentioned that we got a review that gave us 5 stars. Both of these are 5-star reviews, but tell me after I've read them whether they both sound like 5-star reviews, because as I'd argue, this first person doesn't like us all that much, but gave us 5 stars anyway. They say the headline is, All we know is it's cool, which is a Sean Parker quote from Social Network, I'm guessing,
okay.
Right?
Okay. All right.
Good reference. Okay. And find our Fincher Blend episode, because that was a good one for us. He says, or she says, I love that people who enjoy, this is good. I love that people who enjoy movies have a platform to express that love and also share it with their friends and an audience. Listening to the past few episodes of your show, it sometimes comes off to me that you guys forget about the fourth person you're talking to, which is the audience. As much as I enjoy tangents, it sometimes happens I don't even know where you guys are going with something, and I'm just waiting for you guys to stop broing down. For instance, the back to school blend. The back to school blend ended up just turning into bathroom blend anyway. This is Gabe. And you guys are talking about potty humor for 3 minutes. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, he says, but it leaves me wondering when you're going to focus up again and move on to things. I listen to movie podcasts to gain other people's insight, and people that work on news websites tend to have a great insight into both the industry and the art. I feel you guys have that, but then you get caught up in being friends and one another, and I get lost.
Well, that's our show, so...
Thank you for making the show, and I appreciate you taking the time to do it, ! And gave us 5 stars.
Here's the thing about that review.
Yeah.
I respect... I mean, if anybody wants to come on and say what they think we're doing wrong, I am all for that. But
Before you open up the show to anyone that wants to be on it, let's scale that back a little bit.
Well, wait, he's not wrong.
What I just said was, yeah. I'm open to criticism. And if you have negative things to say about our show, we are going to listen to it, obviously, and we'll talk about it. But the negative elements of that review, in my opinion, are what make our show great. That we are friends, that we go off on tangents, that we do talk about movies, that we are talking as if we were just hanging out and having fun. I think we know we have an audience, but I think the beauty of our show is that we are just talking about movies as if we are friends. And people are listening in to us. That's the way I look at our show. So I just agree with the idea that we need to listen. The potty humor thing, fine. We did that one show. That was a joke. We did bathroom blend. That's fine. I get that. And that can be a negative thing. But listen, I think everything else about that review and the negative side is what makes our show great, in my opinion.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think you're absolutely right, Kevin. There's also an element of sort of like, with all due respect to the person that wrote the review, because I appreciate anyone that takes the time to listen.
Right.
To multiple episodes, and then to take the time to write a review and still give us 5 stars despite having issues. It's one of those you got to know what you sign up for things. One time my parents said that they didn't want to watch a Quentin Tarantino movie because all of his characters talk too damn much. And I said, well, that's kind of just his movies, yep. Guys. And so it's one of those that, like, if you don't like the inherent foundation of from which we're building the show, then I have a hard time recommending us to you.
Well, let's move on to the second review, where Movie Mandy dubs us the 3 movie tiers, which I didn't get. Like, it actually took me a full minute to understand, like, that was a Musketeers reference. Yep. I'm really slow, mind you, but it's
Think
just
faster,
weird.
Sean.
Doesn't roll off the tongue like that. And she says, I'm fortunate to know two-thirds of the Blend Brothers and trust that hearing them talk about movies in person is just as entertaining as on a podcast. I was a fan even before knowing them. Knowledgeable, funny, and insightful, a rare blend these days when it comes to talking movies and more, and I think that is very sweet. Probably one of your junket friends, I would imagine. Junketeer.
That is a friend of ours.
Who is this?
It's a friend of ours.
Well, why is there a secrecy about
this? Oh, no, it's not a secret. It's Amanda. Yeah, it's Amanda.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah.
Who does junkets in L.A.
Nice. Oh, it actually is Amanda.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said Lights, Camera, Jackson. I got confused for a second.
No, I was kidding.
Okay.
I don't think Lights, Camera, Jackson listens to us. I don't know.
Can we give Amanda a plug for her? Because she works for Fox in L.A. She's awesome.
Yeah.
She covers
movies,
too.
So she does what we do for Fox in L.A. She's fantastic.
Just find her on Instagram or Twitter.
Amanda Salas is her name.
Yeah. Look her up. Nice. She's really great. She's great at what she does.
Good. Very cool. We are diving into news before we get to. So in a little bit, we're going to do some first man conversation. We're going to remind you guys how much we love Star is Born. We are going to briefly talk about Venom to just give you guys something to set up. I've seen it. Jake and Kevin will see it tonight. No, tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
I believe.
Tomorrow night.
Tomorrow. But that doesn't matter whenever you guys download us. And then we will play a Monster Blend. So we can dive into Venom a little bit later in more detail next week. and especially First Man, which feels like a movie we're going to be talking about for the next few weeks and or months. But I want to start with a movie or news that's very much in our wheelhouse, which is some PG-13 Deadpool that I don't necessarily understand, because it feels like it's, some people are saying it's a new movie. Some people are saying it's a PG-13 cut of Deadpool 2. And if that's the case, I don't get that. That doesn't seem like something I'm interested in. Am I way off base? What is this? Do you guys know what this is?
Hello, Kevin, sell it to me.
No, I honestly don't know the full details about it either. I just know that they released it's on the 20th Century Fox calendar. I honestly don't know. I don't know if that means it's the same movie with less curse words or
like there's huge chunks of that movie that you would have to get rid of to keep a PG-13 movie. And again, to not get into huge spoilers for people who maybe haven't seen Deadpool yet, but like anything with the X-Force team, and that whole thing has to go, I would assume.
To be fair, I'm not really that interested in another R-rated Deadpool, so a PG-13 one really doesn't interest me either.
Hey, Jay, can you just toss out some of that haterade of yours right behind your shoulder there? Because Jake just doesn't love Deadpool. That's fine. I'm wearing Deadpool pants right now. I love Deadpool. I will
stand
watch
up. Let me see.
I will watch anything Deadpool. I will watch anything Deadpool.
But a PG-13 cut of the existing movie?
I don't think it's exactly that. Okay. I would imagine that there's going to be something else to it besides that. There's a lot of articles out there that are speculating what that will actually be, I believe. And I believe Reynolds had tweeted some certain things about it or.
Well, he tweeted a photograph of himself with Fred Savage.
Okay.
And they are replicating the Princess Bride reading a bedtime story, of which, of course, young Fred Savage was the boy in the bed.
Right.
And it's Deadpool being the grandfather reading a story to him. So I don't know if that's their gateway into. If they do that setup and then it's like three original Deadpool short stories, I'm on board with that.
Yeah,
but
I think they can play around with it. Listen, I think Ryan Reynolds is a huge fan of the like the home release element of certain things. And I think taking different cuts and different things, and I don't know. The idea of a PG-13 Deadpool being just a literal PG-13 version of Deadpool 2, I highly doubt that they would do something like that. I think Ryan Reynolds is a lot more clever in the sense that they're going to do something fun with that rating. Like
I do agree with Kevin.
I don't think you're going to go to a movie theater and watch a 45-minute cut of Deadpool 2. I don't think that's going to happen. I think you're going to get, I mean, like you said, Sean, there's that image he tweeted out. I think it's going to be a newer element that we're not understanding fully yet. I think, because what really happened, right? So the day that news came out, the Dark Phoenix movie got delayed, right? And then they put Deadpool 2 PG-13 on their calendar. So the people started speculating what that meant.
Right.
So, yeah, I have a feeling that that's going to be something more than just a 13 cut of the movie, in my opinion. But
arguably, we think that they are testing a PG-13 Deadpool because he's eventually going to be in the MCU?
No. We already know that Bob Iger said that Deadpool will remain R.
But then again, the studio rep for Sony also said, didn't they say like Venom was going to be R? And now he's going back and saying like, yeah, but who? I don't know why people thought it was going to be R, and they found a quote that it was him saying that it was going to be R rated.
Who Fleischer, said this?
Ruben Fleischer didn't shoot an R rated Venom, did he?
No.
There was an interview with I think the producer who recently, I think at the premiere at the junket, was telling people, I don't know why everyone's disappointed that it's not rated R. I don't know where they got the idea. And then someone went and found an old article when they started shooting that was like, I don't know how to make it any other way than R-rated. Of course it's going to be R-rated. And it's like, that's why everyone thought it was going to be R-rated.
Hey, yeah. How do you think the studio felt when Tom Hardy answered that his favorite part of the
was
movie
was cut out?
It didn't make it.
He clarified that, by the way. I saw an IGN.
I didn't think he did a very good job of clarifying it.
I saw that. You saw that IGN.
Yeah, but to me, it looked like he was backtracking a little bit. Well, I think the real answer came the first time.
What I gather from the interview clips I've seen with Hardy is that did you guys read this story? I think the gentleman's name was Mike Ryan, who wrote an article, interviewed Ruben Fleischer. He came across my Twitter timeline. There was like this random scene, and Sean, you've seen it, so you'll know, where apparently Venom jumps into a lobster tank at some point. Apparently that was completely Tom Hardy's idea. He was just on set one day and they were in a fancy restaurant and they looked at a tank and he goes, oh, I want to go in there. I don't know what the context of the story is or whatever. And I'm not trying to spoil anything. I haven't seen the movie. Mm-hmm. But my opinion of the matter is that there is some type of a lot of improv went on this set. Is what it sounds like. And apparently Tom Hardy said there's hours of things that they shot. I haven't seen the film. I've heard that there's an element of comedy and also horror to it and things like that. So I would imagine that there's lots of scenes that he wishes appeared in the film that maybe he came up with that just didn't make the final cut for story purposes. So I don't know. I every time an article comes out like that where someone, an actor says something like that, I always think to myself, is this really what he meant or what they said? I mean, everything gets taken out of context these days. So I need more information on that.
I will tell you about that room in particular, just because we're going to talk about Venom in a minute. Good Lord, what happened to my mouth?
Venom in a minute. Venom in a minute. Try and say that three times fast. Venom in a minute.
That room was Tom Hardy and Riz Ahmed paired, and you guys have run into this situation 100 times, I guarantee it. They were more interested in entertaining each other than they were in participating in the actual press day, which happens. I mean,
which is a bummer because you're someone that actually asks you the kind of questions that you think the talent wants to hear. Like you're not going in there trying to ask personal questions and they're blowing you off. Like you're asking questions about the film and the content and what you're actually there for. So it's frustrating that they would do that.
And I will say that I went a little bit later in the day, and this is my takeaway. I know nothing about what happened, but this is the sense I got. Those two would play a game in between each other when you asked a question. But we had 6 or 7 minutes, which is a longer slot, which is great because it allowed them the ability to do that. And then Hardy would very quickly give you a legitimate answer, which was actually well thought out and gave us something we could run. And I left that room with the impression that the studio might have said to him, look, you can play around if you want to, but you have to give these people some answers. You know, you're the lead. You're the star of this movie, and they need to bring something home. It can't just be you two guys messing around with each other the whole time. So, but I do think that in them riffing off of each other, Hardy might have been honest, but he might also just been sort of going for the laugh too, where the guy said, what was your favorite part? And he's like, oh, it didn't even make the movie. Yeah. So I can't tell, Kevin, saying, I don't know if it was humorous. But it went that quote went everywhere.
I will say this. Ruben Fleischer, Zombieland's one of my favorite movies. I love Zombieland. And I think that, of all time. But I mean, it's one of my favorite recent films. I mean, I love that movie. I mean, plus, I'm a big Metallica fan, so I was always appreciated that opening with For Whom the Bell Tolls and like the slow-mo. And it was a real, and Woody Harrelson's so great in that movie.
It's clever.
Ruben works really good in R rating with that particular film. Like you could tell that R rating kind of suits him, especially Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick's script in Zombieland. Gangster Squad, I really think that movie would have been better had we seen the original version, but we all remember what happened, right? With they had to reshoot that, which was totally understandable, and I totally get it. But that movie, when that happened, that was a bad thing for that film. Do you remember this, Sean?
Was there a shooting?
Yeah, there was the Dark Knight Rises shooting, had it, you know, remember the gentleman walked into the theater and shot people. Yeah. So there was a scene in Gangster Squad where I believe they were behind the screen.
And they were shooting
the audience.
Yeah.
So Ruben Fleischer and the filmmakers and everybody had to go back and reshoot that scene. I can't remember what it ended up being. It was like a car chase, right, Jake, or something like that. Whatever the new scene was. So yeah, Ruben's like one for one, in my opinion. But Venom,
he did 30 minutes or less, also, didn't he?
Yeah, you're right. I guess you're right. Yeah, wow, I didn't really love that movie either. So yeah. I don't know. Venom to me is interesting. I saw someone online, and I don't know who to give credit to for this. They said it was almost like watching Liar Liar, with Venom like going back and forth between Eddie. And I thought that was an interesting comparison. I can't remember who said that online. So if anybody knows, please give them credit. But I thought it was a cool comparison. So I'm actually excited to see it based on the lukewarm reviews, only because I think it's going to be interesting. But Sean, I know we'll get to your review in a second. But yeah, we'll
you
see
brought up the one movie that I really think Ruben Fleischer made that works is Zombieland, and it's because of Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick, I think.
Yeah,
it's obviously their script. If they worked on a Venom script, it'd be a whole other story.
Wernick and Reese, by the way, wrote the script for Michael Bay's new movie, which is going to be, I think that's going to be awesome, that Six Underground film with Ryan Reynolds, that Netflix one.
That's interesting.
So they wrote that script too. So those guys, I mean, they're great writers. So I'll watch anything they do.
We talked briefly about this, but Dark Phoenix has been pushed back. It is now June instead of February. We got our first trailer, which we haven't talked about yet on the show. Tell me right off the bat if that got you excited for the next chapter in the X-Men saga.
Jake. It's funny because trailers are supposed to sort of announce that a movie's coming. Is it horrible that I forgot that that movie even existed until the trailer came out? And I went, oh, that's right.
Yeah.
It
and then
really
not only that, but once
like,
it dropped, they were like, oh, yeah, but not in February.
Yeah,
in
yeah
June.
Just kidding. It sort of felt like they went and collected all of the deleted scenes over the past few X-Men movies and just kind of stitched something together. And it's like, and you know what's sad? Is that with every scene as it progressed in the trailer and it showed a different A-list actor that has returned, I went, really?
Yeah.
Fassbender came back?
Yeah, yeah.
They got McAvoy to come? Jennifer Lawrence came back for this? Yep. Like, that was my biggest impression is how the hell did they get everyone to come back for that? And I feel so bad for Sophie Turner because this is her moment, and I genuinely could not care less.
Jake just completely said exactly what I felt when I watched the trailer, and I didn't know how to explain it because when I saw, like, Fassbender or Jennifer Lawrence, I had that same feeling. I'm like, wait, really? They're in this movie? I had no idea. And it honestly, Jake, it did feel like it was like extra cut scenes from like other X-Men films. It honestly felt like that. You're 100% right. And I don't think it is weird because I think Simon Kinberg, I think he does good work as a producer. I don't know that is this his directorial debut, Sean?
It is. Yes. Okay. I mean, he's co-written and produced all the other X-Men films up to this point, but this is his first time directing.
Yeah, Jake just couldn't have said that better about how I felt. It was one of those weird things where I'm like, wait, Jennifer Lawrence is actually in this. I thought the same thing. I had no idea.
And I mean, there was no set piece. There was nothing that stood out of it. No. Was like just dialogue shots and again, that montage of look who we still have in this. But what really bothers me so much about it is with First Class, when they got all those actors, they were amazing casting coups that you were like, Fassbender as Magneto? And now they just keep doing it to the point where we're worn out by it. It's like, really? You don't have to bring the problem with the first X-Men films that's now a problem with the new X-Men films is that they just do the same characters every single time. Each new movie should be a whole nother cast of new characters recast with different people.
All right, I'll make a statement. I'm curious if you guys agree with me. I'll say best X-Men scene and then best X-Men movie. I think the X-Men film overall is Days of Future Past. I think that's the best one. Best X-Men scene is a toss up between Fassbender's bar scene and X-Men First Class what is the line? Which one do you want to shed first, blood or honor or whatever it was? And then he kills the guys at the bar or. Mm-hmm. Nightcrawler's opening in X2 in the White House.
Nightcrawler's opening is incredible.
Those are strong.
Nightcrawler's intro is incredible. I don't know what my favorite scene is. I can't even know if I can single one out. Anything with Jackman's Wolverine in the first one. His bar fight when he first reveals his claws was incredible. Yes. I love that one. They're all... The problem with the X-Men movies is they all feel kind of generic.
Yeah, well... I thought First Class, besides the scene where they all name each other, when they come up with this.
Oh, it's terrible.
That's bad. Yeah, obviously you can tell I have a problem with naming scenes. Which, by the way, is funny because I'm watching Better Call Saul right now. And the other night, he explained why he was becoming Saul Goodman in the show. But it made sense because that's when the character was born. The Han Solo thing to me was this guy gave him his last name because he was by himself. I think that's stupid, but whatever. But
I digress.
In regards to X-Men, you're right. There is a generic sense to them, which is why Logan was such a breath of fresh air because it was what an X-Men movie would be had it been a super grounded film in reality. I still think the X2 opener is just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah. It is great. It's really good. For people who hear Daenerys, there's a window washer outside Jake's apartment right now.
She's really not pleased.
And Daenerys is super annoyed by the fact that this is happening. So. Yes.
And to give a visual of for our listeners who are listening on a download, Jake, since we all have video on Skype, since we're live on Cinema Blend, we can actually see he turned around his computer to the window. There's genuinely a guy washing his window right now outside, and his dog is freaking out. So that's what you're hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. To answer your question, can I say Logan is my favorite X-Men movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll say Logan is my favorite X-Men movie. See, and then my favorite scene is the final conversation. It's a simple scene. The final dialogue conversation between Xavier and Magneto, Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart in the first one, because it brought it down to a microcosm of these guys just being friends and on opposite sides of an issue. And that scene, that was fantastic.
That's a good
to clarify one thing. When I said that just now, I wasn't considering Deadpool or Logan in that mix. I was just considering.
Okay, then
up.
I would say Days of Future Past.
Yeah, I mean overall, yeah. Logan and Deadpool 1 are my two favorite X-Men films. But in regards to just straight up X-Men, yeah.
the gang,
I like
as it
Days
were.
Of Future Past a lot. But I think the first one might be my favorite. I think Bryan Singer got as close as we've seen. I like X-Men 1 more than X2. I'm one of the.
Oh, so do I. Actually, so do I.
Yeah.
Oh, I think X1's a better movie than X2, but I think X2 is a better opener. It's almost like when you look at the Indiana Jones trilogy. I think that Temple of Doom has the best opener of the trilogy.
I hate that opening.
Oh, I love that opening.
Oh, you like that more than the boulder?
Yes, I think the opening of
and the fertility idol. Who are you?
I think Indy 1 and Indy 3, Raiders and Last Crusade are way better films than Temple of Doom. I'm not in that camp where I think Temple of Doom is not a great movie. I think it's a great film. I just think that. See, I know.
You like the scene with the table rolling?
Anything goes? It's very fun.
I don't like that sequence at all.
But listen, I think a lot of people could agree that Temple of
that
Doom
scene, yes.
has a better opener. I think
no one agrees with that.
I
want to
very quickly tease that.
No one thinks that that's better than the boulder.
For
how
people
you,
who
sir?
Enjoyed our 2-hour TIFF episode, we may be doing another live show very soon together.
Yeah we might,
because all three of us are going to London for Bohemian Rhapsody.
All right, can we put this out publicly here? Can we somehow convince Jake to stay for Wembley Stadium?
I can't stay for Wembley Stadium. This is an off the air conversation, but I have on. Do you hear that whining in the background? That is my child. Aww. I'm a single puppy father. Do you want to rob her of her father being home?
Yes, it's more time with all of us to hang out.
To be honest, Jake,
listen to the cries. Look at that face,
Jake. I'm just being super selfish and want you to be there. That's all.
Then we have to figure. Well, we'll figure out sometime while you're there to record an episode, though. Am I right?
Yes.
And in addition to that, we have something else that I want to tease for the show. Gabe is doing his first junket. Gabe will be coming to Chicago.
He is going
to do the widow's junket.
I'm sorry. Gabe's coming where?
Gabe is coming to Chicago. He is going to do the widow's junket.
First time I've heard about this?
I wanted it to be on the show. And then after we do the junket, we're going to get to critique Gabe's work as a junketeer on the show.
Sean, are you going to Chicago?
Do you see what's over my shoulder? That's a fold-out couch, brother.
Yes.
And that's got your name on it.
Or you can stay in a 5-star hotel that the studio will put you up
in. I'm sorry. Is my home not good enough for Gabe?
I will say, I was in Chicago recently. I wanted to stay at the hotel.
You know what? Maybe, Gabe, maybe you need to produce a new friend. Maybe you need to produce a third member of this team. Because you know what? I quit.
Come on. You can't force it.
I will say this. This was kind of a cool thing. So I was. I'll keep this brief. I was in Chicago recently for night school, and Jake lives in Chicago, obviously, and my buddy Chris Van Vliet lives in Miami. So we were in town. We saw night school. We went over to Jake's house after the movie, and Jake was nice enough to put on The Dark Knight for us, and we watched The Dark Knight scene where the truck flip happens with the 18-wheeler. And then we were able to actually go to the street where the 18-wheeler was flipped by Christopher Nolan and Wally Pfister in The Dark Knight. And actually, I took a photo in the middle of the street after watching the scene in Jake's apartment. And that street at night looks exactly like Nolan shot it. It is scary how crazy it looks. And I don't know if people know this. There was a guy in that truck when they flipped that. That was a stunt guy. It was awesome. So
what you're saying is you can essentially film a Nolan scene with your phone?
Yeah.
You hear that, Wally Pfister? He's coming after you.
He's coming after you. So coming up, we're going to hopefully do a live show from London when the three of us are together, and we're going to be able to critique Gabe's junket performance. So look forward to that in coming episodes. I want to get into Venom. And again, I'm the only one who's seen it, but I think a lot of people are going to be able to download this podcast before the weekend. And I just have to say, so social media reaction broke. We can't review it fully, although we'll have a review on Cinema Blend very soon. And then, of course, the guys are going to go see it on Wednesday. And my Twitter reaction to it was just that I'm disappointed, that it just doesn't work. And it kind of needs to for Sony to be able to have their cinematic universe. And the weirdest part about it is that you almost need Spider-Man to be part of this universe to make it interesting, because Venom as a character, and Kevin, you'll see this, and again, I don't want to reveal too much of it. It's just, he's not, the way that they frame the character doesn't work without, in my opinion, without having Spider-Man as a motivation for this guy to get into the Venom symbiote suit and to go through the narrative arc that they want him to go through. It felt to me, people are calling it dated. I'm seeing that reaction on social media a lot. Like they feel like it's something from the early 2000s. It struck me as when they made Jennifer Garner's movie, Elektra, and they kind of made Elektra just because Daredevil was popular, but there was no reason for that movie to exist. And then you realize nobody cared about that character. That's how, that was my takeaway from Elektra. And this is my takeaway from Venom. I was like, yeah, I just saw a Venom movie, but I don't really necessarily care that he exists.
But is Venom, like, okay, so Elektra, and I haven't seen Venom yet, Elektra is obviously considered, Elektra, Daredevil are considered to be very bad superhero films.
Yeah.
But is Venom on that level?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that it's good.
But is it as bad as those? Because those were bad.
It's like, close.
Is it Catwoman bad?
No, whoever said it's Catwoman bad, I don't necessarily agree with that. And I don't think it's Fantastic Four Josh Trank bad either. I think that it's, I don't know, I'm trying to put it on a par with something. Like the Ghost Rider movies. You know, the Ghost Rider movies had some technical aspects to them that were, you were like, oh, okay, that works on that level. But the CGI, you'll see, there's an action sequence that's teased in the trailers that is him riding on a motorcycle. And I think in the early trailers, when you saw it happen, the motorcycle separates from him and the symbiote has to pull him back to it.
Yeah.
That got such a huge laugh in our theater. Ooh. And again, it's not supposed to. And there are times in that sequence when I just think that like Tom Hardy wasn't even on a motorcycle, you know, like it's all bad green screen and bad CGI. And the problem with the symbiote is just, it's a CGI effect that has to be tinkered with right up until they release it. And in some scenes it looks really good. That we talked about the SWAT scene where he fights the SWAT
team.
That
scene's awesome.
Yes, that scene works. But when you get to the finale, you'll kind of realize that it just, that scene is better than it. It's not terrible.
I haven't seen the film. That's the only thing out of the marketing so far that's kind of like said, oh, that looks pretty cool. Like, because the trailers weren't great. The trailers, for example, I don't love the Venom voice. Yeah. I don't know if that plays it. I'm sure it's a huge part because isn't that the Venom character talking?
It's a huge part.
Yeah. So I haven't seen the film. Jake hasn't seen the film. I see it tomorrow night in New York. I'm interested to see how it is. So we'll see.
I would definitely say that for fans of the comics, there's going to be things in it that you probably like. You'll be able to sort of justify it for a little bit. I think I was able to justify it for about 45 minutes. And then I just got overwhelmed by the stuff that wasn't working. And I had to just finally cave and admit that this isn't what I wanted it to be. And I don't think it's what, it's not the building block that Sony needs it to be in order to keep going in this universe. So
yeah, I get it. I'm still interested in seeing it. I'm hoping that it's, I've actually been reading articles this week about box office and the idea that there's a possibility Starsborn could be number one. The only thing that would be holding it back would be the IMAX 3D and the IMAX ticket prices for Venom. And there's also more theaters for Venom. But if the reviews for Venom aren't great, and Starsborn, it seems like it's on track to make a lot of money, but initial tracking showed Venom beating it. And I think that if you're going to make a bet on it, I would probably go Venom because of the IMAX 3D pricing and the number of theaters. But I don't know. We'll see.
I would not be stunned if Venom wins the weekend, because even with the reactions today, with people going mixed to negative, most of the people underneath it would say, I still want to see it for myself. I don't really care about reviews. And I think they might power it to a big opening weekend. But there's no arguing that Star is Born is the far better movie. And it was really funny. I was listening to an old episode where the weekend after Ready Player One, we were all discussing whether Quiet Place would knock it off. And we were like, I think Quiet Place could do like 20, 25.
What ended up doing, like 45?
It did like 60. It opened like 60. Yeah. So the point is, it's just really hard to predict. You don't really know where people are going to go. But I think both could do really well. I think both could do well this weekend. So we will get around to Star is Born in a little bit, because we just want to. Everybody should go and check out our Toronto episode. That's a 2-hour episode. It's the one where we all saw Stars Born for the first time and kind of gushed about it. But we need to dive into the other big title that's not coming till next week. So we're not going to get into any spoilers for this, but it's a movie we've been tracking for a while. Obviously, it's from one of the patron saints of Real Blend, Mr. Damien Chazelle. The guys went down to Florida to check it out. They have interviews on their YouTube channels. Kevin, did you post yours yet?
Mine are up, yeah.
There are interviews on the YouTube channel. I want to get to Junket Stories, but more importantly, setting up this week's episode, heading into this, we had sort of staked out our claims. Kevin saying First Man, we're talking about First Man, obviously. Kevin saying First Man is a masterpiece. Me saying I like it, but I left disappointed by it. And we left it to Jake to break the tie. Jake, without necessarily giving us, I mean, and you can give us your full breakdown of what it is, but I just need you to reveal what side you're leaning closer to. Masterpiece or okay and had issues?
I'm leaning closer to Kevin's side. I wouldn't say it's a masterpiece, but it's amazing. It's an amazing film.
Okay.
I gotta go with Kevin on this one, if I'm being honest.
All right. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. We appreciate you watching episode 40 of Real Blood. All right. So come on, start weighing in, because Kevin and I have had our say. Yeah. Where are you with this? How did you feel watching it? No,
it's amazing.
And remember, but just, we have to remember that other people haven't seen it.
Other people haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm telling people is that it is not a movie about a guy trying to find a place on a moon. It is not, like, really, if you're going for the moon landing sequence, I don't want to say you're going to be disappointed, but it's the end of the film. It's what, like, maybe the last 15 minutes of the movie?
Sure.
Like, if that. But what you're getting is a movie about a guy that can't find a place on Earth. He doesn't really mesh well with people. His wife has to try to explain to him why he needs to speak to his kids before he walks out the door to go to the moon. Like, he doesn't understand why he needs to do that. So it's really a $70 million character study of a national hero who wanted to be anything but. He didn't want the acclaim that came with it. He didn't want the attention that came with it. All he wanted to do, he just enjoyed the work. And what an interesting position to be in. And you grow up reading that chapter of American history, but at no point, and hearing the name Neil Armstrong and knowing the quote that he says, but at no point in my life have I ever stopped and went, wait, did he want any of this? Like, he didn't want the entire world to only know his name and not be able to tell you the name of all the other people that contributed with Apollo 11. He, you know, one of the things his sons told me this weekend is, because I asked, you know, what would he think of all this? And they said he would spend this entire, I said, you know, if he were doing junket interviews, what would he say? And then one, he wouldn't do junket interviews. But two, he would spend the entire time trying to tell you about all the contributions that the other people made. That ties in with why I love this movie, is that it's not a moon landing movie. It's a movie about Neil Armstrong. And I loved sort of this deep character study. And I thought, you know, it's not a very showy role for Ryan Gosling, but I thought he did an amazing job. I think incredible direction from Damien Chazelle. He took all the cliches that I thought were going to happen in a space movie that I think were taught to me by Apollo 13. Not knocking Apollo, I love Apollo 13, not knocking that movie, but there's certain things that movie trained me to think were going to happen. Like, when they landed on the moon, I assumed there would be a shot that everyone at NASA cheering and everything, and you never get that because it's about Neil Armstrong. It's not about the world, you know? And so that's why I really very much love the movie.
Okay, interesting. How many would you see it contending for Best Picture? Contending.
Oh, yeah.
Not nominated, contending.
No.
No, nominated for sure. What are you nominated talking about?
Are we talking nomination or are we talking contending?
No, contending. I'm assuming that Universal is going to push it in.
I think it's too cold.
I'd argue it's too cold.
I think it's too cold. Dunkirk, and I'm not really knocking it, but was Dunkirk really a contender by the time we got to the Oscars?
Well, no. Wait, are you saying, is it going to be nominated or is it going to win?
I'm contender. Contend. Is it a contender? Contend. Is it a contender to win?
To win,
right?
No.
Now, could it feel like a contender?
We already know it's going to win the award this year. It's already done.
Star you think it's Star is Born?
100%. Right. Yeah, yeah.
No.
Jake,
it's
both
too
know
early.
It's win.
I said
it's too
early. No. We have this discussion every year. We have this discussion every year. It's too. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying there are 1,000 movies you haven't seen yet. It's irresponsible to say that the Best Picture is already done.
Well, I wouldn't call me irresponsible. You're asking a question right now whether or not First Man.
No, you're saying, you know, but you're saying Best Picture is already done, and you can't say
this
that.
Moment
it's
in time.
It's October 2.
I think it's done. I do.
There is no moment in time.
I'm not saying
no, but like I mean, yeah, we haven't seen Green Book. We haven't even seen a trailer for a Clint Eastwood movie yet. We haven't seen Romo. I mean, there are 10,000 movies. Sean, what are your thoughts? Weigh in.
I could see Star is Born winning. I think any movie that comes out in October sets itself up for a very difficult run because it has to maintain its status for a very long time. And the only conversation once the movie is out becomes, well, why aren't you the movie?
When did Moonlight come out? Wasn't that
November,
earlier in
December?
The year?
November, December, I thought.
And then La La Land was when? Like November, right?
Yes, and La La Land was, you know, the presumed favorite, which I think kept a lot of the focus off of...
Moonlight came out October 21st.
Okay, so I mean, like, I could see Star is Born almost taking on the La La Land position of, like, everybody saying, oh, this will be the one, and then
there's the
backlash. Suddenly it isn't.
And then it finds that every movie, every Oscar movie, or every Oscar season, there's one movie that ends up, like, becoming a quick favorite, and then being around in the race for so long where it starts having to defend itself.
One thing Star is Born has with La La Land, too, is that we always sort of say, like, oh, the movie industry or the entertainment industry movie has a leg up because the Hollywood likes to reward its own kind of thing. But that backfired on La La Land also, because I thought it was a shoe-in, you know, that was a done deal. Kevin feels about Star is Born right now.
You know, a lot of times, too, is that a lot of times people will start assuming that a movie's going to win, and because of that, they'll throw their supporter behind, which is why a lot of people say Tom Hanks hasn't received an Oscar nomination in coming up on 20 years, because everyone assumes he's going to get nominated, so they vote for someone else.
All right, let me say two things here. One, I will dial back my definitiveness on that.
Giving you a hard time.
I know, but
I shouted you down.
I just genuinely think at this moment it's going to win Best Picture. But, you know,
that's not crazy talk.
That's not crazy talk. I just think...
I agree.
Saying the race is over is premature.
I agree. Two things I want to mention about First Man. Well, right now... I have three number ones. Those are my number ones. I do. Now, again...
I don't know why you do a top 10 list.
I've never, ever, at the end of the year, made an actual official tie on my list. I'm going to decide. But right now, Ready Player One, First Man, and Star is Born are my number one movies of the year. Easily. No question. And I actually don't know which one I'm going to pick. I'm seeing First Man for a third time Thursday. I'm seeing Star is Born for a second time Friday. I've seen Ready Player One 6 or 7 times already. I don't know which one is going to be my number one, but right now they're both on even playing fields.
And all three of those are better than Infinity War.
Yeah, way better. And I think Infinity War is a great film, don't get me wrong. But here's the thing about First Man.
Yeah.
I do want to mention some of the filmmaking aspects of it because I don't think a lot of people really understand yet what went into making this movie, and Jake saw it with me, and even Jake looked at me when I said to him, there's no green screen. He goes, but how? The movie has zero green screen. And listen, from an emotional storytelling point, Jake just nailed why the movie works emotionally. I agree with every point of that. But I think on top of that, what makes the film a masterpiece is the idea that the filmmaking is on par equally with the emotional element of the film. The fact that Jake was mentioning the idea that the film puts you in situations that you don't normally see in a space film. The Gemini 8 sequence, the launch, you're in the cockpit the entire time. I know, Sean, you were not a fan of the shaky camera. I thought that was so brilliant because we are Neil Armstrong in that scene. Like Jake said, this is a Neil Armstrong film. We are his POV. And the fact that Damien Chazelle did that, for the most part, all in camera. I mean, you're talking about gigantic LED screens surrounding these capsules.
Nolan come up with that? Was that
I don't know.
His
I don't know if he came up with it, but
or he popularized it.
Well, Interstellar was this guy who did the production design for Interstellar worked on the production design for First Man. So for people who aren't aware of what I'm talking about, anytime they're looking out of a window in these spacecrafts, in First Man, they're looking at actual images, actual imagery that was blasted onto an LED screen that's literally reflecting off the visors of the actors in their astronaut helmets. If you go to my Twitter, which is Kevin McCarthy TV, look at the interview I just posted with Ryan Gosling. I put a ton of the behind-the-scenes footage up. You're going to see Lena Sandgren, the cinematographer, shooting sequences with these massive screens where they have like miniatures or elements of the capsules in front of these screens, and that's what you're watching when you watch it. The movie is shot very documentary style, and Jay can attest to this as well, and Sean, you can too. It's like you're watching somebody who filmed real footage of this exact moment in history. So if somebody were to go inside the capsule for the Gemini 8 launch with Neil Armstrong, that's what you would see. And I feel like Chazelle did almost the impossible by making us feel like we were somehow watching archival footage of Neil Armstrong and the astronauts. On top of that, Jake mentions one thing about the movie not being a moon landing film. I agree 100%. And what I mean by that is the movie's not really about the failures that lead to this success, but also the deaths and the horrifying things that happened to a lot of these astronauts and a lot of people who flew with Neil Armstrong. And that weight, that emotional weight that weighs on him, and which kind of turns him into a bit of a, not a zombie, but he's not really a social person. And he's dealt with so many bad things that's happened in his life. So all I will say is this: on an emotional level, it's phenomenal. On a filmmaking level, it's phenomenal. And then you have Justin Hurwitz's score that just that brings everything together. The main theme of Hurwitz's music that plays during the lunar module landing on the moon is one of the most astonishing pieces of music I've ever heard in my life. And it's all kind of based slightly around a song called Lunar Rhapsody, which is, Jake, the song they listen to when they're dancing in the room. It's an astounding achievement, and I love it beyond belief. I'm going for a third time Thursday, and I want people to listen. I understand that inside baseball filmmaking might not be for everybody, and I know Jake and I have disagreed on this in the past, that, you know, he doesn't want to know how the magic is done, but the fact that that movie has zero green screen is pretty unfreaking believable. And I think Jake, you who's not a big like technical guy, can appreciate what you were watching
absolutely.
On screen.
It was cool. And it's also cool too, because I feel like green screen is something that's never really been perfected.
No.
Yet this looks amazing. So I feel like they instantly course corrected green screen.
I mean, the idea that you can literally film these capsules and these crafts against a screen. Like, Jake, if you asked me this question, where the shot where you saw the Earth and you saw the piece of the capsule fly off and land back, we were like, how are they doing that? That's what they're doing. They're literally having an Earth on the screen, and then they're detaching the capsule and letting it fall. Wait till you see the footage of Ryan Gosling and Corey on the moon. They had a 200,000-watt lamp light that was the sun. And then they had to deal with shadows. I don't know how they made this movie. I don't understand it. And I've seen footage of it. I don't get it. So to me, here's what he did brilliantly, and this is the last thing I'll say about it. You have a filmmaker who has mastered a technical and an emotional level for a film. And I think sometimes it happens in the other way around. Sometimes you have just a cool technical achievement and not a great emotional achievement. This is both. And that's why I think it's a masterpiece. I think it's truly remarkable what he pulled off.
Counterpoint? Do I get to go?
Yeah, go.
It's technically impressive, but it is a lifeless movie.
Wow.
It doesn't have the emotion, or I don't see the emotion that you see in it. And I think a big hurdle to it, which is a design of the film, is that its protagonist is an emotionless person, which I think I think he has to be. I think all of the astronauts, and somebody made this critique too, and I find this was a critique that was leveled at Dunkirk, and I find that interesting that you don't see this as a problem. I never knew who the people were in the movie. Like, I knew who Ryan Gosling was, and I kind of knew who Corey Stoll was because it's Buzz Aldrin, but all the other people that were in the team with them, I don't know who they were. They were just generic white astronauts to me.
Like, here's the thing, though. You're also combining... Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Let me finish. So I never really got caught up in, or swept up in, the emotion of it, because Neil Armstrong, as our surrogate into the story, is an emotionless guy. And that's who he is, and that's fine. I wouldn't want him to be portrayed like Harrison Ford, you know, with overly charismatic and winking at the audience. It's not who he was. But so when you have to tell this story with using him as our entrance way into the story, it never hooked me as a lead. And then so because of that, one element that I've discussed with you guys that I don't like in the movie that didn't work for me is his home life and his stuff with his kids and the stuff with his wife. We'll get into conversations later when we can talk about the film in depth. Every time that it got away from the impossible obstacles to overcome at NASA and had to deal with Neil being at home, because the story is basically he didn't feel comfortable at home, then I never felt comfortable when he was at home. Like, and I never understood, you know, that sacrifice that they're trying to say was so emotional and devastating for him. He never showed it, so I never felt it. So then later, when the movie really has to make you take a big step with him, and I won't say why or what, it made no registry for me whatsoever. I just didn't feel a thing. I didn't feel anything.
And the thing that you're referring to, which we're gonna hold off on detailing until later on, I think that moment to me is so perfect. It's so warranted. It's so needed. It's so necessary. It's exactly what I think those people would have done. And Jake, vaguely speaking.
Oh, I'm not even. Wait, hold on. I'm not even talking about that. Specifically, we're talking about the ending of the thing. We have to take it to a text chain. I can't do it right now.
Okay.
I can't, because it's going to give away too much. It's going to be something spoiler. I'll tell you what in the text chain that I'm
Jake, do you think
to.
The movie is lifeless?
I think the movie is cold because it follows a cold person. I think there are emotions that I feel in it, but I think you're both right. I think the movie follows a person who is a cold, kind of somewhat awkward person, and as a result sort of feels that way as well. However, I do still feel things when things happen to other people. I feel emotions that he feels as a result of what happened to other people. But I do feel like it is, I understand the Dunkirk comparisons.
I will say one thing and then we'll move on. If you get a chance, you're listening to our podcast, see the film in IMAX. If you can, seek out a actual IMAX theater, a theater, maybe like a science museum. I know Jake, and if you live in Chicago, you have the Navy Pier. If you live in DC, you have the Lockheed Martin. The entire moon sequence is shot on full blown IMAX. If you do happen to go to like a normal movie theater that has an IMAX installed, some of those theaters are IMAX, but they're not real IMAX in the sense of they have the IMAX name on them. They will still expand, but the change from 16 millimeter film to 65 millimeter IMAX is astounding. And Damien explained it like when people were on the moon, there was a heightened sense of realism, and that's what you're supposed to portray in that moment. So I'm seeing.
Does
it again.
Change the moment he steps out onto
yes.
the steps?
So you saw it. You actually saw it in the format that I'm jealous that you saw it in.
Yeah.
And not to get too nerdy in regards to numbers, but the format you saw it in was called 1-4-3, and what that means is you actually got the full blown. Genuine six story, whatever it was, you saw at Cinesphere IMAX shots. We saw it in, I believe, and I could be wrong, a 1.90 format, which is the digital IMAX format, not the laser format. So it didn't go blow full up. It still blew up a little bit.
Yeah.
But I just really recommend finding a science theater like Lockheed Martin National Air and Space. They have it. Jake has it at Navy Pier. Just go. Trust me. It's going to be insane.
So strange that the studio doesn't support, or I can't say they're not supporting, but like in these big moments when press are seeing it, or when they just had this 60th anniversary NASA, you know, screening in regional markets to celebrate, that they didn't put IMAX prints out there for people to see.
Because especially considering how big of a deal the first IMAX preview or the first main IMAX preview was with Mission Impossible. They made such a big deal out of that. And
right,
now
we all went to
but never mind.
Fallout.
To clarify, we did see the film in IMAX, Jake. We saw the film in the IMAX format that you will find in the majority of the IMAX theaters in this country are the format we saw it in. And that's the reality of the situation.
Did you ask him about burning the prints? You were going to ask him about why they aren't burning prints.
I'm going to ask him tomorrow. So I'm sorry, I'll see him Thursday. So I am.
Look at you.
And I got to give credit to a gentleman on Twitter, and I think his name is Anton, or I'll look it up specifically and give him full credit once we get into the next topic. But he's very adamant. He started a whole petition online about getting 70 millimeter IMAX prints made for the first man. So he actually has been very adamant about trying to get more of those out there. But again, the problem is the majority of IMAX screens in our country are not the full true IMAX that we're referring to. So you have to think about it from a studio's perspective. They're trying to get it into as many IMAX theaters as possible.
Jake, will First Man make your top 10?
Yes.
Wait, Jake, isn't it your number one?
No, I don't have a number one right now. I have 18 number ones.
When we walked out, you did say that might be my number one.
Yeah, it's near the top of my list.
Interesting. Let me talk about another movie that it might be your top number one movie instead, and that's Bad Times at the El Royale, a movie that we will review in depth next week when more people can see it. But real fast, Jake, that's going to make your top 10?
Absolutely. It's one of my 74 number ones.
You guys saw it?
We both saw it last night.
You saw it. So I've only seen the 20 minutes of footage. Yeah. How insane was that tracking shot in the hallway?
It's insane. It's incredible.
I'm going to be honest. I feel like you hyped that up a little bit for me.
How could you overhype that scene?
I don't know. Because it started to happen, and I was like, oh, this is what Kevin told me about. And then when it happened, there was a little bit of like,
Wait.
Okay, that was it.
Here's the thing. 8 months prep. 28 takes.
We'll talk about this. We'll talk about it after you've seen it.
28 takes. Do you have any idea how hard that shot was? Damn near impossible. It's insane how they did that.
Kevin, it is Tarantino-esque.
Oh, I can't wait.
It's probably the best movie that Tarantino hasn't directed in a really long time.
I'm seeing it tonight, so we'll see.
Yeah, I know. Text us afterwards. Let's get on to... Gabe is really testy. He keeps yelling at me.
Oh, no. I've been watching Gabe's face this entire show, and this has been his face the whole show.
He's loved it.
To be fair, he's also dealing with me running around my apartment trying to shush my dog. Who has finally calmed down because the window washers are away. Look,
Gabe's going to have a heart attack one day on our air. It's going to happen.
It's going to be when we discuss him interviewing the cast of Widows, basically. We are playing Monster Blend. All October, we are using a horror theme for the Monster game. And we asked everybody on social media to play along with Monster Blend. We have a pretty fun one lined up for next week also. I have to go and see what order we're going in. And look at that. I'm in the show notes, and there's no order for the way that we're supposed to go. If only we had a producer. I'll say then that...
His head exploded from us talking about things we weren't supposed to be talking
Jake
about.
Jake gets to go first, because I think we're going to want to save Kevin's for the end.
The monster I picked is Freddy Krueger.
Ah, nice.
For a lot of different reasons. I'm just going to speed through them. One, in order for the character to work, it specifically needs to be played by one person. Robert Englund, Jackie Earle Haley tried and he did his best, but it's Robert Englund's character. It's not one of 18 people that's played Jason or one of 18 people that's played Michael Myers or a guy in a monster suit. It's got to be Robert Englund. It's a character that has a really dark, messed up backstory that a lot of people forget about. The dude's a pedophile. He's a pedophile that was captured by parents and then burned alive and then has made it his mission to go and haunt the children of those people that burned him alive. It was also borderline... He was a borderline scary guy, but also like weirdly funny. He's just this massive part of pop culture. And for so many reasons that sort of capture that, I just think Freddy Krueger is just, to me, the pinnacle movie monster.
Do you know what I love about Freddy is that when we get to my pick too, it works against my pick.
Interesting.
Is that if you don't like, so my pick is Jason, and I'll get the Jason
interesting.
In a minute.
Yeah. Interesting.
But
interesting.
If you don't like Jason, just don't go to the camp. Right.
Right.
If you're scared of Freddy, don't go to sleep.
Right.
How
Good
do you
luck
do
with
that?
That?
You can't not do that. That's a great place.
That's
tremendous.
That's like when you write yourself into a corner and come up with a great thing. Like with and I thought about the Xenomorph too. Making the Xenomorph's blood acid is a brilliant way to write yourself out of a corner, because the easy answer would be, well, why don't you just shoot the thing or tear it down? You can't, because then you tear a hole in your ship and you're all sucked out into space. So the dream thing with Freddy. The acid blood with the xenomorph, it's brilliant.
The idea that you couldn't fall asleep in a Freddy movie is one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen in my life. And I also really liked him in that Tom Green movie, too. He was really good in that as well.
Yeah, when Freddy got fingered.
Yeah.
It's really good. You know what I loved about the nightmare ones, too, is when people they'd be slapping themselves to stay awake, and then you'd be in the dream, but it would look like they were like in the normal thing, but then like one thing would be off. So you didn't know like, oh wait, are we in the dream just yet? Like not when they would go into the school and you'd see a body bag getting dragged around, but like if someone was in their room and they didn't know they fell asleep and then they're in the room and then all of a sudden like Freddy just comes up behind. So great. So great.
Dude,
and yet
Johnny Depp's death in the first one is just Unbelievable. Oh my God. That scene really is so brutal. It's just the blood just going out of the bed. Oh.
Wait, Sean, sell me Jason.
I picked Jason because it's favorite, not best. And I love the Friday the 13th movies. I love them unapologetically. I think that they are, that's my type of horror. I like really cheesy slasher 80s horror. It's great to me. I love the fact that the filmmakers just keep bringing kids back to Camp Crystal Lake. And it's all about how do we get them naked? How do we get them in uncompromising positions so that Jason can come through and come up with really creative ways to kill him? And I love the fact that he doesn't really have a motivating factor behind him, except the fact that he looks like a badass with a hockey mask. And
he's a mama's boy,
has an amazing machete and some amazing other, you know, tools that he can use. And it became like we talked about this briefly on one of the other episodes of horror movies at that time. You went to the horror movie to cheer on the creature, to cheer on the villain. And, it wasn't until years later, because I grew up on Nightmare on Elm Street films and Friday the 13th movies and having fun watching people get stalked by these guys, that I finally caught up with Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
And it disturbed me so much that I was like, this isn't fun. Like, Leatherface is really, he's an awful person. And he hung that girl on a hook and she's still alive. And he wears a mask made out of human skin and uses a chainsaw. Like, that's what horror should be. Right. Horror to me was always like, it's like Scream, you know, it had fun elements to it and it was creative. And I just loved coming up with creative ways that Jason killed people. And so, he's my favorite monster movie. I don't think he's the most effective. I think he's more comedic. I think
if I were to choose best, I would choose Hannibal Lecter. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't get to say Hannibal Lecter, but Kevin gets to say his choice.
No, I just don't know what Hannibal Lecter's really done. Like, what did he do? He sat in a cage and was like, he was well performed by Anthony Hopkins, but is he terrifying?
The people that were eaten, I would say so.
Yeah.
I think Gary Oldman is scarier looking in the Hannibal movie.
Oh, with is Mason Verger?
Yeah. With his face all deformed.
Sean,
that's
is
a
it
scarier
true?
Deal.
Is it true that the Friday the 13th like DVD box, it says Jason Goes to Manhattan is better than Forrest Gump? Is that what that says on there?
I would believe that. I actually believe that. Oh, I actually, Sean, if I'm Sean. Ranking movies, I would put Jason Goes to Manhattan
ahead
of Forrest Gump.
I like Manhattan, to be honest.
Yeah, because it's not a bad movie. It's actually kind
of
funny.
Remember that boat scene? He's like, comes out of the water? I don't know. I like Jason Goes
to Manhattan. It's great. Actually, I actually like Jason X also, where he wakes up in space on a spaceship.
I love Freddy
those
vs.
Movies
Jason.
Aren't bad. And Freddy vs. Jason is great. I love those movies. I love those movies wholeheartedly. And when people try to tell me that they're not good, they're lying.
How did Kevin Smith not sue that movie for a character that looked just like Jason, Jay and Silent Bob, like Jay? Remember the guy, the stoner guy in Freddy vs. Jason, had the long hair?
Yeah, he probably took it as a compliment.
I know, does,
I mean, was it the same studio? I mean, does Kevin Smith own those characters?
I'm sure he does all these characters.
I think he should. All right, Kevin has a controversial pick.
Well, first of all,
he's gonna make Jake very angry.
I need to explain. First of all, I don't really fully understand hashtag monster blend. I don't understand what the parameters are, because apparently there's a lot of guidelines that if it fits your narrative, then it's fine. So I, first of all, didn't understand that we had to go full horror. I thought monster blend just to me sounds like who's a monster in a film. Now,
what's a Halloween theme?
Now, Halloween.
We're doing this during the month of October.
Like, I could have picked Ray Fiennes in Schindler's List.
But
he's a monster.
But okay, hold on a second. So then I clarified with Gabe on text earlier. I said, Gabe, what do you mean by monster? He goes, well, you know, a character who's inflicting horror. And I said, okay, so can I go with a pick that I want to go with? And he said, no, that one doesn't count. I said, what about Ghostface from Scream? Now, that's not really a monster. That's also multiple people. Then on top of that, then I told Jake my pick. I'm sorry. Then Jake was talking about other ones that he thought were monsters in movies. He said, Predator. I said, oh, well, that completely
Predator is a literal monster.
That justifies my pick then.
Yeah.
Because Predator is in a sci-fi film, not a horror movie, but
sci-fi
you're considering him or her to be a... I actually don't know the sex of the Predator. I don't remember.
I'm not sure either. Yeah.
So you consider that to be a valid choice in the monster blend. Am I right, Jake? Jake?
Yes.
Okay. So my pick is completely valid. I went with the T-1000 from Terminator 2.
And I think that that's a fair pick.
It's not even the scariest Terminator.
First of all...
He is, though. He's the most unstoppable Terminator.
It's one of the most frightening characters ever. Because the guy literally had no motivation except for to kill John Connor. And he would do anything to do it. And, you know, it's interesting to me because monster... I don't even consider Michael Myers to be a monster. He's a human being in a mask. See, Gabe's shaking his head, but like... You know, Jason Voorhees, is he really a monster? I mean, I guess he's dead and I don't know. I have no idea. Freddy.
Somewhat supernatural.
Freddy, you know, so I don't really understand what monster means. So I'm going with a character who I think inflicts horror. So if Jake considers the Predator to be a valid choice in this game, there's no reason why T-1000 cannot be.
And now, Jake, would you argue that the T-800 is scarier than the T-1000?
Yes.
Okay, that's not a bad argument.
Is he a monster?
Because I also think that he's a robot.
Is he a monster?
Sure. Yes. I think both are monsters.
Okay.
And I think both are valid.
Okay. So the T-1000, I mean, think about the ending scene when he's getting all blown up in pieces and then ends up in that steel molten pit and he's like turning into different people's faces. That dude was like a shapeshifter. He could make knives out of his hand. He's not much different from Freddy Krueger in the sense that he could like manipulate things with knives and whatever it was, he could stab.
John Connor's step-parents think he's a monster.
Right. So I'm just
They got stabbed through the milk.
Yeah. That scene is horrifying. That scene's scarier than most scenes. And that scene alone, think about how freaky that scene is. When she has her hand extended onto the refrigerator and pulls it out as the milk carton falls and Todd falls down. And then he goes out and kills the dog in the special edition. That's a monster. Okay, they took that scene out because it was too monster, right, Jake?
I'm with Kevin.
So
I'm with Kevin.
My point being that if the idea and criteria of a monster is someone who inflicts horror on people, why can't T-1000 be that if you allow Predator in your thing? That's where I disagree. So
I need to screen grab Jake.
I will say this. To keep it with a horror theme.
Yes.
To make it a little more fair, if you want me to stick within that guideline of boundaries, even though Predator
don't care anymore, Kevin.
Well, fair. I will say this. My favorite horror movie of all time is Evil Dead 2.
Yes.
I don't know what the monster would be in that film. The Force itself, whatever goes into Ash's hand or the book. I don't know.
It's got to be a physical creature. It's got to be a creature.
Okay, so see, there's a lot of guidelines here that you guys have set that I don't even understand fully. So
I almost went with Brundlefly.
That's a great one. That's a great one.
That's a legit monster. And I know some people said The Thing. The Thing from The Thing. It's a great choice.
I mean, I was looking up. So when you guys said this, I was like, I don't know what are the greatest monsters of all time? And like the Mist is on some of the lists out there and things like that. But when you're thinking favorite, I just think of someone who's the T-1000. I just thought he was an unstoppable, horrific force that just didn't care. I mean, Michael Myers, that's a great choice as well. I mean, there's just so many things. You know, Jake, do you remember a conversation we had with the guy from Universal over the weekend about why Michael Myers is one of the greatest horror villains or monsters of all time? Mm-hmm. Because there's no reason for what he's doing. He has no, you mentioned Freddy's reasoning. Jason has reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
Not the saying these are valid reasons to do what they do, but what I mean is Michael Myers, why is he doing this? We don't know. Yeah. And the scariest thing Michael Myers does is that head tilt. That head tilt freaks me out. When he like looks at somebody who he's just killed and he's just like that, and like he's like trying to figure out what he just did or what's going on. Yeah. That's ridiculously scary.
Also, they're giving away the best scare. One of the best scares in the new Halloween movie is him in the closet, and it's in the trailers, and it annoys me.
That's a great moment.
I hate that that's there. Yep, it's a really good moment. Hopefully, we will lure Jake back into the conversation with next week's blend game. We are going for our favorite horror deaths, deaths in a horror movie.
Old Yeller.
We're having a hard time with... It is a horrible death. With phrasing it, but I think we're going to just settle on hashtag horror death blend. Horror death blend? It's a lot. It's a mouthful. But I think people will follow along. They'll figure it out. This is a death in a horror movie.
Now that blend. Is more specific.
Blend.
So it has to be a horror movie.
Okay. Now that makes sense.
And a death inside of that horror movie.
Perfect.
There's some very creative ones you can play with.
Yeah, I mean, there's a million of them. It's funny, right? You said that. I looked over to my right and I saw the Blu-ray for The Strangers, which I don't love that movie, but I always thought that scene was so terrifying when, like, it's just like the wide shot of the kitchen and he just walks in. I don't know if you remember that scene, but it was freaky, man.
To me, one of the all-time scariest lines in any movie is "because you were home."
That's
just a really, like, they're bloody and they're beaten and they're on the couch and they're tied up and they're about to die and they sort of mumble, like, why are you doing this? And one of the girls just says, "because you were home."
Oh, God, that is
Which
terrifying.
Is just, like, that's horrifying.
Well, we will be back at this next week where we will get into some more of the first man debate. We will fully review Venom, where the other guys can weigh in. We will probably talk about the next delay in X-Men Dark Phoenix's production schedule. And we will play hashtag horror death blend. So play along with us at home.
Sean, when are you seeing First Man again?
I don't think I'm going to.
That's a problem.
I'm going to try not to.
That's going to be an issue.
I wanted to see it last night, but then they didn't put it in IMAX. And instead, I went to go see El Royale, and it ends up becoming like one of my top movies of the year. That was a huge left turn that worked to my advantage. Because I was on my way to First Man for a second time, and I would have got there, and it wouldn't be IMAX, and I'd be annoyed. And then everybody I know would have told me how great El Royale is, and then I'd be really ticked off. So thank you for watching us on the Facebook page. If you are downloading us on iTunes or Spotify, head on over, drop us a review. We're still trying to get to 100 star ratings before we get to the end of the year. Or like I said, we're going to have to kick Jake off the podcast, unfortunately. We can be found at Real Blend, R-E-E-L-B-L-E-N-D. You can also send us your picks if you're not on Twitter at an email, realblend@cinemablend.com. I threw out a while ago that we're really hoping that somebody with some musical abilities can give us music to open the show, because Gabe won't let us pay for the rights to songs that we like and use as introductions, because I know Kevin has probably a great Metallica riff or something that we could use intro.
Dude, the best intro ever would be Pantera's Walk, man. If we could open up with that would be so
fantastic.
Sick.
So if we could just...
do it ourselves, like... Dun, 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 dun. Then we could all just come in and like do the guitar parts and the drums, and come on, man, it'd be awesome.
Putting stuff together. So we will be back next week. We don't have a time yet, but we'll figure it out. We'll put it on the Twitter feed, and until then, thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Dunkirk.
And Solo.
Dunkirk.
Also Solo. Dunkirk. C-1000 isn't a monster.
Dunkirk, yes he is. Neither, if you think the Predator is, then yes he is.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.